This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Developments continue in the turmoil surrounding speed skating in this country. Late Tuesday, a group of short track speed skaters and their supporters filed a Section 10 complaint with the U.S. Olympic Committee, asking it to put U.S. speed skating on probation and increase USOC oversight. They say the governing body hasn't addressed grievances they brought to light last August. Meanwhile, it's currently unclear what will happen next in the wake of last week's allegations that skater Bridie Farrell made on this program that she was sexually abused by fellow skater Andy Gabel. He went on to become president of U.S. Speed Skating. Gabel admitted to the behavior last Friday and resigned from his positions with the International Skating Union and U.S. Speed Skating over the weekend. In her interviews on WUWM, Farrell made reference to the work being done by the Women's Sports Foundation to ensure the safety of athletes. But why are athletes vulnerable in the first place? Nancy Hogshead-Makar is the Senior Director of Advocacy for the Women's Sports Foundation. She's also winner of 3 Olympic gold medals in swimming. She joins us on the line from Florida. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Oh, thank you for having me, Mitch. Appreciate it.
How endemic do you believe the issue of sexual harassment and sexual misconduct are currently in organized sports?
I think that organized sports is a great place for people who are adept at grooming their victims. Coaches and athletes spend an enormous amount of time together. They spend time alone together. And there are just certain attributes about sports as opposed to other kinds of academic endeavors that make sports particularly likely to groom sexual molesters. So things like in athletics, there's a natural and appropriate focus on the body as to how somebody feels and how the muscles are working. And right, there's, you know, the coach and athlete talk about that. And so very easily it can slip into that inappropriate. There is an enormous power dynamic that goes on between the coach and the athlete that is probably not true with the same areas of, say, a teacher or something like that. At the college level or at the more elite levels, that coach controls more and more of the athlete's life. So while a teacher would probably never consider telling a student, I don't know, what time to go to bed and what to eat and when to take a rest and, you know, when to stand on their head, coaches have no problem doing any of those things. They can really regulate an athlete's life quite to the smallest detail.
We've had Bridie Farrell on this show a couple of times in the last week related to her story of abuse 15 years ago by a fellow skater and one in which the power dynamic was very similar to an athlete and coach. And the theme that has come up several times in those interviews is that her aim is to affect a broader change in the culture of sports, and she is not the only one saying that. And so when you hear someone talking about the culture of sports as it pertains to this issue, what do you hear?
Well, a couple things. Number one is that everybody needs to be aware that this is a potential issue with you've got, you know, here Bridie was 15 years old and her teammate is 35 years old. So, you know, for parents to recognize that, you know, they shouldn't do everything that the coach says. They shouldn't do everything that the really well-respected other athlete is doing, that they need to establish their own boundaries. And that clubs need to have somebody designated within their program that somebody can go to, not just for sexual harassment, sexual abuse, but also for athlete abuse issues. Someplace a neutral that the athlete can go to. You know, I always say one of the reasons why I was able to be so successful is because I had coaches that I could say no to. In so many areas of sport, we don't allow the athlete to say no. So they go and they get injured. They follow this crazy diets that a coach who knows nothing about dietary things will follow and get sick as a result of that. So when there is a big secret, one of the things that Bridie says over and over again is that she had nowhere to go. Nobody talked about sexual abuse. Nobody talked about, you know, you're in a culture where it's akin to being a soldier. You are told to buck up, do exactly as you're told, and you can achieve infamy if you follow this path right here.
Well, and it sounds like the kind of person you're talking about having in place at the club level is somebody almost like an ombudsman.
Yeah, something like an ombudsman. Yeah, it's interesting, actually. Schools that receive federal funds, which is almost all upper schools, and it excludes a very small number of both high schools and colleges, schools that receive federal funds are subject to Title IX. Title IX says that you can't discriminate based on sex, which includes sexual harassment and molestation. So a school has a natural obligation to make sure that if something's happening, that that they would weed it out and get rid of it. Okay, in businesses, employees have another statute called Title VII. Title VII says that if there is any sexual harassment or molestation or coercion going on, that they need to find it, weed it out, and ameliorate its effects. But when it comes to club sports, there's nothing. There is no statute that helps clubs change their behavior so that they can get the bad actors out.
There is this thing called the Ted Stevens Amateur and Olympic Sports Act that Congress passed some time ago. What does that do, and what does that not do?
That has a great provision in it, which says that the national governing bodies and the USOC cannot discriminate based on race, sex, national origin, religion, etc. Okay, it's a basic civil rights protection. But it only applies to whether or not a kid is going to make the team. So if somebody who's molesting you is keeping you from making the team, this actually happened to an athlete whose name is Catherine Starr. Her coach raped her and then said, if you don't keep sleeping with me, I will keep you off the team. In that case, the Amateur Sports Act would apply because he's doing something to keep her off the team. But just, you know, what happened to Bridie, I mean, Andy Gable wasn't keeping her off the team. So that statute's not affected. The only thing that we've got right now is recently the USOC passed a new internal regulation which says that if NGB's national governing bodies, like speed skating or swimming or diving or track and field, any of these, want to get their money from the International Olympic Committee and the United States Olympic Committee, that they have to have policies in place that prohibit coaches from abusing their athletes. Now, it's a very narrow agreement that was passed in that it only applies to coaches that are explicitly hired by the NGB. So, again, Bridie wouldn't be covered by something like this. We do need to have more protection to help more athletes that, again, gives every business has an incentive to weed out sexual harassment within their workforce. Every school has an incentive to weed out sexual harassment, sexual assault within their school. And we need to provide those same sorts of incentives for the Olympic Committee and for national governing bodies.
And you would contend that just the fact that it's illegal and a crime isn't enough?
Well, typically it's not enough because, I mean, Bridie, again, is a great example. She's very young. She gets groomed by Andy Gable into not telling anybody, and that's common. And usually, actually, she came out after only 15 years. Most of the women that I talk to, and there have been a great number of them, it takes them 25 years before they're ready to come out and talk about it. Meanwhile, that coach is still out there molesting. And so you got the statute of limitations problem that, you know, that when it comes to criminal law, it just, you know, a lot of counselors counsel victims don't go to the police because it's such a traumatic process. I mean, in order for them to be convicted, it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a very high standard. For a school or for a business, it's just 51%. It's just preponderance of the evidence. So it makes it a much more victim-friendly climate, if you will. So no, I don't. So criminal law really they have much shorter statute of limitations, and usually victims they're just not ready to come out and tell anybody yet.
I wonder, are we at the point between Bridie's coming forward and saying this stuff publicly and the stories that have come out of USA Swimming, for example, in recent months and years, are we getting to the point where the world is a more uncomfortable place for abusers?
Oh, don't I hope so. Yeah. yeah, I think that abusers need to know that these women do grow up, they have their own families, and that is what has triggered a number of people to call the Women's Sports Foundation, to call us, is because their kid becomes roughly the same age that they were molested, and now they really want to do something about it. And right, but it takes quite a while for somebody to get their chutzpah to get their own mojo to come and do something about it. But I do hope that molesters are learning the lesson that eventually that these women are going to talk about it, and that they are, you know, they don't stay 15 years old forever.
It's interesting. There seems to be this irony that kept coming to mind as Bridie told her story, and that is, you know, you think about, in her case, she was a short track speed skater, and athletes in general are very physically tough. I mean, you know, the short track speed skaters go into the corners with sharpened elbows, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's difficult, I think, for some people, I imagine, to process that these people are also vulnerable.
Oh, isn't that funny? Because I would say that would make them more vulnerable. That their single-minded focusedness is exactly what makes them perfectly groomable. And I'll give you an example with the Catholic Church, in that the more in love with God that the victim was, the more they yearned to be closer to God, the more that they felt this sense of obligation to please and to do whatever the priest said, the more likely they were to get victimized. It was their love of God. It was the best thing about them that made them likely to be victimized. Same thing here with athletes. The more that athlete craves winning and being the best, and the more that they're willing to sacrifice, and that they are tremendously gutsy and sort of that nose to the grindstone, you got that steely-eyed focus there, it's like this is part of what it takes to be able to get there. And so that makes them particularly groomable if they have that sense about themselves.
How remarkable is this story in that Andy Gabel admitted to it so quickly after the story broke?
Well, I've actually seen it a couple times, but yeah, the fact that he admitted to it and resigned from the board, so it didn't take a lot of, you know, Bridie didn't face what I would have expected. You know, you try to prepare somebody for, you're just going to get negative reactions, and I don't care if you were raped under the most egregious circumstances, there will always be a voice or two out there to say, what were you wearing, and what were you... You know, you were coming on to him, and you blah, blah, blah. You just have to be ready for that. That's just part of being, sadly, it's a part of being a woman in our society. And the fact that she didn't get that was really great. And, you know, and I would hope that we would see more of that. I've actually got a case in mind that I'm really hoping that happens.
You tweeted right after the Bridie Farrell story and the Gabel admission broke. You tweeted that the world is changing. Do you really believe we're at the point where things have changed?
I think it is changing. I wouldn't say has changed. I will see that the world has changed when we have legal protection for athletes like Bridie at the time, when we have people in place who the athlete can go to. But I think more and more women are comfortable coming out and saying it. As I said, it only took her 15 years, and I have to say that's short. It only took her 15 years, and you know, she got somebody removed from sport, very quickly. And so, I think that's just an amazing, wonderful, positive change. I can't say enough good things about her. She spoke so clearly, so well, so vulnerably, so. You know, she really took a very powerful stand against what had happened to her. She really came through with the right motives. People heard that, and I think he heard that, and that's only going to encourage more people to come forward and to get the bad actors out. I think it actually started with Sandusky, that's what brought to light so many of the abuses within United States Swimming, and having our national governing body know about those abuses and not doing anything about it. In some cases, even recommending that the coach get hired at another position, knowing that they had been involved in sexual molestation. No, so I'd say, you know, is changing. You know, not you know, the Women's Sports Foundation work in this area still has a long way to go.
I wonder if it feels like you're watching the dominoes fall in front of you.
Yeah. I've got a front row seat.
Well, Nancy Hogshead-Makar, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mitch, for having me on your show. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Nancy Hogshead Makar is Senior Director of Advocacy for the Women's Sports Foundation, a professor of law at Florida Coastal School of Law, and winner of 3 Olympic gold medals in swimming. There are links to the Women's Sports Foundation. Plus, you can hear more of our conversation at WUWM.com/likeeffect. The weather is starting to warm up a bit. That seems like good news, but the freeze-thaw cycle can come at a price to your house. We'll learn more next on Lake Effect.